Welcome to Yinzer Ballin episode 4. Craig and Brady here. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL Conference Championship games. We're going to get into the Steelers' hire of their new offensive coordinator, and we're going to talk a little bit about getting into the positions each week for the Steelers as they enter the offseason. This week, talking a little bit about quarterbacks, and we might do a little bit of Pirates talk at the end as well. Brady, let's start off talking about the conference championship games, in particular the Ravens Chiefs. Little bit of an upset there, maybe, as the Chiefs beat the Ravens and kind of stymied the Ravens offense.
I don't think the Ravens at all deserved to win that game. I mean, they just, especially in the second half, they did everything to blow the game. They had penalties. Zay Flowers had that one taunting penalty that cost them. He also fumbled the ball at the goal line, which was a mistake because that could have been 7 points right there. The one thing I really want to say that Baltimore should have did better on was they didn't run the ball at all. Gus Edwards at one point had three for the throughout the game. He had three rushes for 20 yards. That's almost 7 yards a carry, and they only ran with him three times. I actually think they only ran with Justice Hill a few times too. I think it was maybe like twice. So I do not think that was a well-coached game by Harbaugh. Lamar did not look that good. He had that one costly interception that he threw in the end zone towards the fourth at the like halfway through the fourth quarter. You just can't do that. You gotta keep driving the ball, and you gotta try to get closer and not gamble at anything. Because at that point, they only had like, I think, 6 minutes left. And once he threw that pick, the Chiefs could have easily scored again, and they didn't. But it was very costly. And the Chiefs did not score at all in the second half. So that's when the Ravens really blew their opportunities because the defense was shutting down the Chiefs in the second half, and the offense couldn't take they couldn't go with it. So I don't think the Ravens deserved to win that game at all. I think the Chiefs played better ultimately.
Yeah, it's kind of what we talked about last week, where the Chiefs just have gone in the playoffs into this "you can't kill us" mode, right? Where they are playing exceptionally different football in the playoffs, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, than they played most of the regular season. They have become very much a bit of a run-heavy team, and using that to open up the passing game a little bit and hit bigger plays down the field when they have opportunities, and not trying to force the ball down the field.
Yeah, I agree.
So, the question for me with Baltimore is, where do they go from here? We talked a little bit about this with Buffalo last week, and they just can't seem to get over that hump of beating the Chiefs. And you kind of started to have the feel last week that maybe the Ravens were getting over that hump a little bit, and Lamar was getting over his playoff hump, but then they're right back to kind of where they started. You have a home game in the championship game. You've had your best season really that you've had. It can be hard to come back from that moving forward. Particularly when you're in the free agency shape they're in, probably going to lose several key players.
Yeah, they have a lot of free agents.
We'll get back to the Chiefs, talking a little bit about them as we get to talking about pre-Super Bowl preview. Let's talk about the other game, which was the 49ers Lions, where the Lions got a 17-point lead. And I don't want to say blew it, but they kind of did a little bit blow it. And the 49ers come back and win the game.
Dan Campbell, I know a lot of people are going to back him up on this when they say he's been aggressive all year. And I know that's the type of coach he is. But in the NFC Championship, you got it. When you're in the NFC Championship about to go to the Super Bowl and you have a 17-point lead, you have to stop being so aggressive. You just got to settle for points and keep inching the lead every chance you can get. That doesn't mean you have to score a touchdown. If you have a field goal opportunity, you should take it, especially if you're up by that many points. I think that was the key reason why they lost. I think he got too aggressive. He wanted to just shut them down, like without even giving them a chance. But you got to play smarter than that. I know he's been doing that all year, but it's different when you have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. You just can't do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing about when you look at taking risks in games, which if you're in a week seven game in October and you take those risks, number one, usually they're going to work out because you're not playing against the other best team in the conference,
Right.
probably. But number two, you have much more margin for error because not everybody's playing like it's the last game of the season in week seven in October. Everything you do, every decision you make is much more magnified in the playoffs, and in particular, each step you take along the way in a championship game, right? You can't coach the same way in a championship game as you coach during the regular season or even early in the playoffs. And it drives me a little crazy when people talk about that and say, well, he coached the way he did all season. And I think that's kind of an indictment on a coach, to be honest, because you have to coach a little bit differently when you're in a championship game, knowing that number one, you can't take as many risks. Number two, though, you really have to be living in the situation, right?
Right, yeah.
So if I come out and I say, this is what bothered me about his decision-making process. If I'm going into halftime with a 17 point, I'm going to halftime with a 14 point lead, come back out, make it 17 points again. You come down, kick a field goal, make it 14 points. And now I have the opportunity to go down the field and I have the opportunity to go back up 17. But with 6 minutes less left in the game, plus I'm making you drive the length of the field now, as opposed to, 30 yards to score a touchdown. That's a completely different scenario. And I'm not saying that Lions win if they don't make that decision, or I'm not even saying that we know that the Lions kicker makes the field goal, because we don't. But you have to play the odds there and say, okay, in this situation, I would like to be aggressive and go for it, but the math says to me in my head, I'm basically going to be a quarter and change away from winning a conference championship game and going to the Super Bowl if I just kick the field goal here.
Many people think that it wasn't really as much of Campbell's aggressiveness. Well, it was, but they think more it was because Campbell didn't believe in like the kicker in the moment, because obviously the kid like that their kicker struggled at the beginning of the year to even be on the practice squad, and now he's their starting kicker. And I just think that, but it's hard for me to believe that because he's been solid all year. I really don't understand why they don't just like try to let him make the field goal. Like he's been a solid kicker all year, whether he was at the practice squad at the beginning of the year or not. It just amazes me how they just didn't do that. And when you look at the score, it was 31 to 34. They lost by a field goal. And if they could have had two field goals, they would have won by a field goal. So it just You look back on that, and I think it really hurts for all of them, especially knowing that if they went for the field goals, they would have won the game. So yes, they would have won the game if they would have made them. They would have probably made at least one too, so it would have went in overtime. So you just get, I agree with you. You got to look at it like the little things. You just can't be that aggressive, and you have to have confidence in your kicker and not send them out there and then lose the game.
Throughout sports history, when people start talking about curses, and I've heard this a little bit with Buffalo, I've heard it a little bit with Detroit as it relates to football in these playoffs. We saw it a long time with the Chicago Cubs. We saw it a long time with the Boston Red Sox. When people start talking about curses, you can also look through a long history of bad decision making that
Right.
usually go along with, quote, curses. Because a lot of those teams were really close to winning a number of times. And then you look back and you say, yeah, there was a mistake that was made here or there. But when you look at the decision-making process that led to some of those mistakes, it's not so much of a curse as it is just poor choices.
Just bad coaching, yeah. I mean, you don't win the game for a reason. I mean, the better coach usually tends to win the game. It doesn't matter really about skill so much anymore. It just matters about the coaching.
Yeah, well, and the thing was, the Lions generally played well enough to win that game, with one exception. Their defense in the second half was not very good.
Oh yeah, it was atrocious. Yeah.
And so that's the one area where I think that you navigate that a little bit as in this discussion too, right? As maybe you have a coach who's trying to be overly aggressive to compensate for the fact that he really doesn't trust his defense that much. So he's saying, like, I have to keep the ball here. I have to score touchdowns. Field goals aren't going to be enough to win the game. But that's again where I think you have to go back and you have to say, in this particular situation, does that still apply? Because I may have thought that going into the game, but now that I'm up by 17 in the middle of the third quarter, the dynamics have changed.
Right. Yeah. It just, yeah, I'm still confused about that game, man. They really blew it.
And this is going to give us the match that no one really wanted to see because we just saw it 4 years ago with the 49ers and Chiefs. I think people were a little bit more excited about the Ravens-Lions matchup, or getting the Lions in there somehow. But at the end of the day, we're also probably seeing two of the most talented rosters, complete rosters in the league.
Yeah, I think both the Chiefs and the 49ers deserve it. I think the Ravens and Lions also did too, but like I don't know how people could be mad about this. I know with all like the Taylor Swift controversy and all that, it for some people it sucks seeing that, but most people can just cry about it or they could just enjoy the Super Bowl. It's going to be a good game. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to
I'm
be a
not too
really good
mad
game.
about it. Obviously, I wanted the Ravens and Lions, and even as a Steelers fan, I wanted the Ravens to be in the Super Bowl. But like, I'm not going to sit here and cry about it. You just gotta enjoy the game. It's going to be a good game.
So we're going to get to talking a little bit more next week about the actual matchup between the Chiefs and the 49ers because that will be, the day before the Super Bowl. Do you have any early insight on this game of what you think the biggest factors are going to be going into the game? Just a week out.
Last week the Chiefs offense did not look very good. I mean, they won. I know they won, but I think that was more of the Ravens blowing it and letting them win. You know what I mean? So don't know. I don't really know a prediction yet because I think the 49ers could struggle too. Like they looked better. They looked very good offensively at the end, but that was also because the Lions blew it. I think both teams are partly here because their opponents blew the game. So I don't really know, to be honest with you. Well, obviously we'll talk about it more next week. I'm sorry, I don't really have a clear prediction right now. I think it's going to be a really close game, obviously, but I have really no clue.
Yeah, we'll get more into it next time, but I think it's going to be a good matchup. Switching gears for a second, I want to go back to something you said before, which is as a Steelers fan, you were rooting for the Ravens. And I saw that war going on a lot in social media in the last week where people were asking the question, can you be a Steelers fan and actually root for the Ravens, Browns, or Bengals? Which I think is a weird question because we do that all the time when we need one of those teams to win for us to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But, it's interesting too because there's a lot of different reasons why you might root for the Ravens in that game. Number one, people were a little bit tired of seeing the Chiefs in six consecutive AFC Championship games or whatever it is and, just being there every year. So I get it from that standpoint. But maybe you want Ravens to win in the conference championship just so they could go lose in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that might be for some people. I think it was mostly because of Taylor Swift, but also with the Chiefs going to like a bunch of Super Bowls recently. So yeah, I think it was a mix of that too. That wasn't really why I wanted the Ravens to win. It was mostly because I was tired of the Chiefs, but it wasn't because of the Taylor Swift part. She's just there to support her boyfriend. I don't really have a problem with it. I know it gets annoying that the NFL always shows her when like Kelce scores a touchdown or they make a big play, but that wasn't the reason why I wanted the Ravens to win. I'm just tired of seeing the Chiefs being so good every year.
Listen, the NFL has much many more problems than Taylor Swift appearing on the shows on the games. I mean, some of us have to listen to Tony Romo for an entire game.
Yeah.
I would rather see Taylor Swift for 10 seconds than have to listen to Tony Romo for an entire game.
I love when Tony Romo talks. Sometimes it makes no sense.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit now and go to some Steelers talk. New offensive coordinator this week, Arthur Smith, former head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. What's your take on him and the hire?
I think obviously the ceiling is way higher than what we had with Matt Canada, because here's why. I really don't think Matt Canada like was good at running the ball at times. I feel like he was very predictable. With Arthur Smith, we saw when he had Derrick Henry in Tennessee, he loves to run the ball. I'm not saying he, as a coach with the Falcons, he didn't play the right players like Bijan and like Kyle Pitts, but like he likes to run the ball. So I think that's very good considering we have a good backfield in Najee and Jaylen Warren. Like they're both very consistent. They both Najee had over 1,000 yards. Jaylen Warren's very serviceable, and he's a good pass receiver too. So sorry, a pass running back, like a catch receiver. So I think there's more upside than the last two offensive coordinators we had. I know he wasn't a good coach, but he was a solid OC with Tennessee with Derrick Henry and Tannehill. So I really don't think it's that bad. I'm interested to see what happens. I think he'll do a decent job there.
Yeah, so there's a couple opinions I have on this. Number one, I agree with you 100% about the difference between him and Matt Canada. And for me, probably the most telling piece of information on Matt Canada is how many teams have inquired about Matt Canada being interested in being any type of coach for them since he's been fired?
A big fat donut.
Right,
Zero.
none. And like you watch how a lot of these coaches are reshuffled and rebranded and retreaded throughout the NFL. It's still very much an old boys club in terms of if you have experience, we want you. If you don't, we don't. And it's just kind of that shuffling that keeps happening. And for a guy who was an offensive coordinator, not to even be getting an interview for another offensive coordinator position or a quarterback coach or a wide receiver coach, really telling to me that, nobody else really saw him as an NFL level coach even.
It got
So
bad. It got bad during like everybody knows he's bad in the world. Like everybody knows he did a terrible job. You could see on like social media posts, like the social media posts will not be any NFL related. It'd be like about like dancing, and in the comments you just see like fire Matt Canada. Like
yeah.
it was a world like wide like treachery. Like everybody knows he's terrible. And I think a lot of NFL teams, almost all the NFL teams have noticed that. If not all. So it doesn't surprise me that he hasn't been asked to like coach or even be like a quarterback coach, but it is shocking that like some other guys are in the league and he's not, like, because there are also a lot of other people that are just like him in terms of coaching. Like they're bad. So yeah, I understand what you're saying there.
So then you go to Arthur Smith, who I think there's no secret right now that the strength of the Steelers' offense is their run game. So from that perspective, I think that his hire makes a lot of sense because he's going to run the football. The other thing that his offense has historically liked to do is throw the football over the middle, which the Steelers have seemed to be allergic to since over their last two offensive coordinators, where everything is a 5-yard pass toward the sidelines.
Yeah, or a slant route. It's just they don't get first downs from it. They just struggle.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see them develop that more and use the middle of the field more. I think he's a good fit from the standpoint of another aspect of the game that they have completely abandoned the last 5 years is the play action pass. And he relies on that heavy in his offense, which I think is a good thing. And I think it takes pressure off the quarterback, particularly when you have a run game, right? Like when they were playing Buffalo in the playoffs, when they lined up on that goal line play, and I saw the formation being five wide receiver set, no running backs in the backfield from, first and five from the first and goal from the five, my initial thought was, why? Like the running game is your strength. Why would you not use that to, even if you intend to pass the ball, line up as if you're gonna run it and run a fake, or at least present that formation as an option to the defense that you might do that.
Right, because
He
it's just so predictable. Like the defense knows you're going to throw it. That's why they got the interception. They were prepared for it.
And I think that puts a lot, like whether you're talking about Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, it just puts it an extraordinary amount of pressure on the quarterback to make a play when the other defense knows what's coming.
Right, I
Right?
agree
Like,
with that.
I mean, when you're talking about pro level game, everybody is good. You can't just outplay the other team. There's got to be some scheming, there's got to be some designing, there's got to be some, strategy that goes with trying to make plays. And so I think that will change a little bit and for the better. One of the things that I was really happy to see today is that they are also interviewing people right now to be a passing game coordinator. And I think that would be a great complement to Arthur Smith's ability to run the ball, is to bring in somebody who's a little bit more innovative from a passing standpoint and pair him with him and continue to work on developing the quarterbacks.
Absolutely, like it could work out. The ceiling's great. I feel like if he combines with a good passing coach, they'll be really good. So yeah, I think it's a way better future than what we had with Canada and the last the intern OC. So yeah.
The other thing is, if I'm the Steelers right now, there are two phone calls that I'm making today from a coaching standpoint. One of them is to Mike Vrabel. One of them is to Eric Bieniemy, and I'm trying to get them on my staff in some capacity. Maybe not as coordinators because those jobs are taken, but maybe I hire Vrabel as an associate head coach, right? Or in a role that Brian Flores was in for the year that he was here. Maybe I bring Bieniemy in as, a quarterbacks coach or a passing game coordinator. I think there's a lot of talent out there that they could benefit from a coaching standpoint with some of these guys, if you make the call to do it.
It really shocks me that Mike Vrabel does not have a job right now. Like Dan Quinn, is he the coach of the Commanders now? Is that who it is?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that kind of surprises me considering his defense gave up 40 points to the Packers in their last playoff game. So yeah, I don't know. I just don't really understand how Vrabel's not a coach in the NFL right now. In any way. Like even it could be like as a complete demotion, but he still should be a coach somewhere, like whether it's a quarterback coach, defense, passing. Like, I know he's more of a defensive guy, obviously, but he needs to be in the NFL some way because it's kind of a disgrace, in my opinion.
Well, the other thing is with Vrabel, his not being hired by a team as head coach actually surprises me more than Belichick. And I know people are looking at Belichick as, the legend, which he is, but he's also older. And, there's questions about how much more time in the league he actually has. And if you're a team like knowing, if I'm the Commanders, for example, I'm not one player away from a championship. I need to rebuild my team, right? That's sort of a ground up rebuild. And by the time that team is ready to win, Belichick probably isn't going to be a coach in the NFL anymore. So, that's definitely a consideration. But I also think part of the issue with Belichick, he comes with the baggage of wanting to also be the general manager, and he has not been good at that for the last several years in New England. And I was listening to Chris Sims' podcast the other day, and he had really good insight on this because he played in New England for a year. And he was a assistant coach. He was like a special assistant coach, lower level, for them after he retired from playing. And he said, one of the criticisms he walked away with from New England in terms of how they evaluated players is they based like most of their evaluation on whether the person was in the right place all the time. Like they were smart football players, and he would sit there and think, yeah. But this person isn't very good. Like they're in the right place all the time, but they made two tackles. And this other guy might be in the wrong place 2 times out of 100, but he made 96 tackles. And like there is a point where like the Patriot way may have gotten lost a little bit in like, is this person just smart versus is this person really good? I mean, because for a long time they had this magic mix of people who were both really smart and also really talented.
That's why I agree with you with the age part. It's not so much, it is because he's like 71 years old. He is old, but the game has changed. And he still has this. I feel like Belichick still has this old way of like, we need to do it my way and not like, not advance with like how the game is actually played today. 'Cause you got like, true or false, like, there's more younger coaches in the NFL than there is old coaches now.
Yeah, I think in particular, we've seen the last couple hiring cycles in the NFL where there's been a really great emphasis on, bringing in younger talent and kind of, especially on the offensive side of the football. I mean, that's really where a lot of the hires seem to come from. It's, getting younger, innovative guys on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier to hire a younger coach now because like they know how the game is played today versus how it was played like 20 years ago, you know? So it's like it's a better fit for all offenses and defenses and just for the front office in general. So I feel like that's Belichick's weaknesses, and that's why he hasn't been hired, or he's probably not going to get hired.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with him, like if he takes this year off, which he's going to probably be forced into taking this year off, if the interest actually increases for him next year or it dies down. And I have a feeling it's going to be hard next year because you had a lot of coaching changes this year. I think there were eight at one point, eight spots that were open for head coaches. That's a quarter of the league. And, when you look at the likelihood that it's going to be that great again next year, I don't think it's going to be.
Yeah, I think his luck's running out, and I think his time in the NFL is almost over, if not already over.
So we wanted to start getting into the Steelers offseason and position by position. So let's spend some time today talking about the quarterback position. Let's talk about the current quarterbacks first. Pickett, Rudolph, Trubisky. Who do you see coming back? Who do you not see coming back?
I think obviously they need to give Kenny Pickett one more year. I think that's fair to say. Trubisky needs to go. He needs to walk out now. I'm not even trying to be rude. He just gotta go. Like, he's awful. And Mason, I would bring Mason Rudolph back if I was Tomlin. I think he's already said that. I think you can kind of hint to that as what he said in his press conference a few weeks ago after their loss. I think he wants Pickett and Rudolph to compete. But yeah, I would bring him back considering how decent he played this year at the end. He gave us like the best chance of winning, I feel like. I feel like he did a better job than Pickett this year, even though he only played like four games. So yeah, that's who I would bring back. I wouldn't trade for it would be really nice to get like someone like Kirk Cousins, because he's obviously very good. But the age scares me. He's 35 years old, so, and I could see the Vikings bringing him back for another year or two. So yeah, I don't really know. I think he wants to stay a Viking. I just don't think there's any way we can get him. I don't think it would be the right move to get him either right now, just considering his age.
Probably the three most frequently named quarterbacks. Well, I guess there's four now that have been linked to the Steelers for the upcoming season as far as free agents go, are Kirk Cousins, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, and Ryan Tannehill now with the Arthur Smith connection.
Is Kyler Murray a free agent?
I don't think so.
Really? Okay.
I honestly don't see any of those four coming here. And
Yeah, I don't see that either.
because here's the thing, right? The Steelers can either free up some cap space to spend on other positions of need, like bringing in maybe another cornerback to go with Joey Porter,
Build up the O line.
working on the O-line, linebacker depth, safety depth, a third wide receiver, I think is necessary.
Crucial, yeah.
I don't see them creating a ton of cap space to bring in Kirk Cousins.
I don't see it either.
I don't see them at all giving up the draft capital to trade for Justin Fields, right? Like they're not going to give up a number one or number two pick for him. And I understand it because like as good of an athlete as he is, Kenny Pickett has a higher winning percentage over the last 2 years than Justin Fields does.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's everything or it's the most important thing, like when evaluating a quarterback, but it does mean something. And you know, so when you look at giving up, you know, a first or second round pick, I just don't, or a third round pick even, they need to draft other positions where you can't give up multiple picks to get that guy in here for a, when you when he's hasn't demonstrated like a super high winning percentage yet at this point in his career. And he may at one point, but he's just he hasn't done that yet to be able to give up that pick. To me, Russell Wilson is off the table from the beginning. I think his best years are behind him.
Same
I
with
think this,
Tannehill.
yeah,
Same with
I
Tannehill.
think the Steelers got two quarterbacks on their roster that are better than both of them for next year. Not saying
Yeah.
that they're better at one like than Russell Wilson in his prime or Tannehill in his prime, but those guys are not in their prime anymore.
Yeah, they're far past that. I agree with you about Justin Fields. I'm not saying he's bad. I think he's got a lot of potential, especially on the run. And if he like keeps developing his passing game, he's gonna be really good. But you're right. He hasn't proved anything. Like Kenny Pickett has won way more than he has in the NFL so far. So I think that tells you all you need. Like he, until Fields proves something, he's not going to be looked at as a very good QB.
Yeah, and so I think what you're likely to see is you're likely to see Pickett back, Rudolph re-signed, unless somebody breaks the bank to give him a big contract to be the starter. Then obviously he's not going to come back. But I don't know that that's going to happen either. I think that's going to be the determining factor in him. Now, if he leaves, I think you're more likely to see a guy like Tannehill or a you know, Russell Wilson type brought in to compete with Pickett, knowing that Pickett's probably going to win that competition, even if he really doesn't, and that person will be the backup. Either way, I think you're going to have to bring in a third quarterback because I agree with you that Trubisky is gone. I think you probably draft a quarterback somewhere in like round six, or you bring in a lower level free agent.
Some notable free agents here, like notable, like lower level, are Jacoby Brissett, Tyler Huntley, Jameis Winston, and Jake. I wouldn't say Jake Browning's lower, but he's in there too. Baker Mayfield's obviously in there, but he's gonna probably he deserves to be re-signed with the Bucs. I think they'll re-sign him. So Browning, Huntley, Winston, and Brissett are probably the main four that probably the lower level free agents. I wouldn't say I'd say Browning's proved to be better than all of them, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, I think the most likely scenario is you come back with Pickett, Rudolph, lower level free agent, or somebody who gets drafted in the really late rounds. I just don't see a big name coming in to be the quarterback. I think they're really gonna want to focus on coaching changes on the offensive side for this year and say, okay, what do we really have here with a competent offense? And if we have a competent offense, then what does the quarterback position look like? And then if we don't have that person, then maybe we need to do some drafting of that position high in the next round.
I agree. I really don't think we should worry about the quarterback position this year. Obviously, if it sucks this year, next year again, we need to draft somebody. But yeah, I really think we should try to stick to Rudolph and Pickett this year. What do you think is going to happen to Jake Browning? Do you think some team's going to give him a big contract and he'll go and start there?
I think it's likely. But the only thing that makes this year hard to predict in terms of free agent quarterbacks is there's a really strong quarterback class that's getting drafted. So, I mean, you could have four or five teams who were five or six teams that replace their quarterbacks with, you know, first level draft picks in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I agree. You got like obviously Michael Penix, Bo Nix. McCarthy's gonna be, I think, a late round or early second round guy. I think you got, oh man, I'm blanking out here. You got Caleb Williams, obviously, early, probably maybe first overall. You got Drake May.
Drake
There's just a
May,
lot
yeah.
of talent there.
And Jaden
So
Daniels too, who's going to be a top pick.
he'll be up there too. Yeah. So I really see, I don't know. For the teams that Jake Browning could go to, I have Vikings, depending on if they give away Kirk Cousins or if they keep him. It really depends. Because obviously, if they want Cousins back, he's going to be their starter. Got Falcons. That depends if they draft somebody or if they try to get Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields can land there if he gets traded anywhere. And then Seahawks, depending on, because Geno Smith's contract is almost up, but I have heard talks that they are trying to get Michael Penix in the draft because I think they have the 16th pick. So I think they're going to hope that Penix falls to them, considering he is a Washington like state native. So yeah. You got Raiders. That depends what they do with O'Connell or if they draft the QB. And then Commanders will probably draft the QB. So those are like the teams that I feel like he has a chance of going to. But I can honestly see half of them, if not all of them, drafting a QB.
Yeah, that's what makes the Mason Rudolph thing really interesting too, right? Because like those are the teams you would also look at that would be good fits for him. But here's the thing, like he has to know in his head, I probably have a better chance of beating out Kenny Pickett if he starts to falter at all really early in the season. He's not like if he goes into a place where Caleb Williams is drafted, they're gonna let Caleb Williams play the entire year, no matter how bad he might be in that year,
Right,
because
because he's the number one pick.
he's the number one pick. It doesn't matter who's behind him. He's playing football.
That's what the Panthers did with Bryce Young this year. I mean, I know he struggled, and every quarterback is going to struggle in that position, but they weren't going to bench Bryce Young. They're just going to try to let him play it out.
Yeah, so I think you're gonna see like a it's gonna be an interesting offseason for the quarterbacks because I actually don't think you're gonna see a lot of movement with free agent quarterbacks until the draft. Because I think teams are going to see what can I get in the draft because that class is pretty deep up top, and then they're going to start to adjust after that. Cousins may be the exception, and I honestly see Minnesota probably bringing him back because I just don't think they have any other option, and they don't draft high enough to be able to get one of the elite top three quarterbacks.
I feel like if they don't bring him back, then that's going to be it for Justin Jefferson there.
Yeah, that's a
Because
good point too. He's going to get very frustrated if they have to play.
in the past seasons, Justin Jefferson has owned up to admit that he would not be this successful without Kirk Cousins. So I think that just shows you how much he loves Kirk Cousins and he wishes that he could stay as his quarterback. So if Minnesota truly doesn't bring him back, then that might hurt their potential to keep Justin Jefferson too. I think he's gonna probably go if Cousins goes. So that's interesting too. I don't know where he'd go if
Yeah.
because obviously every team is gonna try to give him big money to go to,
Right.
every like contending team. So that'd be interesting too. That's for another day though.
So two things to look at before we wrap up today. Number one, Jagoff of the week. I'm gonna go with Vontaze Burfict, who former Cincinnati Bengal, who said earlier this week that he did not play dirty except, quote, when he played the Steelers. Then he admitted to what we all knew for years, which is when he did play the Steelers, he played dirty. He took cheap shots on players. I still think he is the single biggest factor in Antonio Brown's CTE, more than any other person right now in terms of the way Antonio Brown has acted. Perfect to me was a great example of a guy who could have been really well known for his play on the field if it wasn't for all the other antics, because he had a period where he was one of the best linebackers in the NFL, but it was always overshadowed by drama and just penalties and doing stupid things.
He talked more with his mouth than his actions on the field, which is why, yeah, I agree he's overshadowed. Because I obviously don't like him as a Steelers fan, but he wasn't a bad player at all. Like he was a captain on every defense he's been on pretty much. So it just he's played so dirty in his career that just overshadowed all the stuff he's done good on the field. So yeah.
We talk a lot about the few number of playoff wins that Mike Tomlin has over the last 10 years. And one of those was gift wrapped to him by Vontaze Burfict, who lost his mind at the end of the Bengals Steelers game about 10 years ago, and basically through his own penalties gave them the game. So yeah, sometimes you just, I mean, he, if we did a show 10 years ago, he would have been Jagoff of the week then, and he still continues to shine in that way. Let's
Yeah.
talk a little bit of, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was gonna say,
I really don't have a Jaguar for the week this week. I mean, it would probably have to be like I love Dan Campbell, but just considering what he did this week, it probably have to be him.
Yeah,
So
he was one of my other candidates too, just because he was a little bit of a jagoff this week.
you could probably put the Ravens up there based on how much they blew that game too. I mean, but I think Dan Campbell's probably the biggest story at the moment of that, so I'd probably go with him.
Also, late breaking jagoff of the week is Cliff Kingsbury, who decided to stay in Thailand rather than to come be the Raiders offensive coordinator.
What?
Yeah, he was offered the job and he turned it down apparently, which might end up being great news for the Steelers because one of the other candidates for that job was Mike Sullivan, who is the Steelers quarterbacks coach, which could open up another position on the staff to bring in somebody who is a lot more modern in their offensive thinking.
Wow, that's you see, it was the Raiders offensive coordinator. Like he would have
Yes.
got that. Wow. That kind of surprises me. I mean, with an offense like Devontae Adams in it, and like I don't see why he would turn that job down, but I don't know. I mean, I guess he had a better reason. I don't know.
Well, there's a little bit of speculation with Kingsbury too that perhaps he's being interviewed by the Commanders and that's the job he wants, which does make some sense if that ends up being the case because the Commanders are going to go pick their quarterback of the future in this
Yeah,
year.
they're gonna get like a depends. What do you know what pick they have?
Second.
Oh, really? So depending on if Caleb Williams gets drafted first, they'll probably have either Caleb Williams or like Drake May or Jaden Daniels or something like that.
Right. Either way, they're going to have, like, essentially their pick of two of those top three quarterbacks.
Yeah. So they might be fine. Yeah, that's a good point, I guess. He would probably rather go there.
But hey, if it opens up a spot on the Pittsburgh coaching staff for somebody new, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'd love to have him here too.
Yeah, well, they won't get him, but I'm just saying that they'll have an opportunity to hire a new quarterbacks coach, which I think. I mean, we've seen Mike Sullivan with Kenny Pickett for 2 years now, and things
And
have
he
not
hasn't
really
done much.
improved. So I think we
Yeah.
need to look at different options. So, as spring training nears for the Pirates, we're going to start next week looking a little bit at position by position for them, starting with the pitchers and catchers next week because they report to camp soon. I think it's in 10 days from now they report to camp. Really, this week, no major moves for the Pirates. So we'll kind of get into them, talking a little bit more about them. Pitt with an epic comeback from behind win against Wake Forest this week, after a tough loss earlier in the week to Miami, which a game which they rallied but fell short. They continue to be a team that flashes. It's going to be interesting to see what they put together here these last, 5 weeks of the regular season and tournaments to see if they can make a run at the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think they're definitely improving this year. They've looked a lot better this year than in a few past years, so I think they're doing a decent job right now.
All right, so that's going to wrap us up for episode 4. We will see you all again next week. Don't forget, as you view our episodes, to hit the subscribe button at the top of the website and also to follow us on Twitter at YinzerBallen.